This week on Vox Talks, does it make sense to tax wealth as well as income? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Economists have been discussing the optimal rates of income tax for decades. But recent research has put the spotlight back on the importance of wealth rather than income as a driver of inequality. And so, if we want to reduce inequality, does it make sense to tax that wealth? At the moment, few countries even attempt to do this, and even if policymakers did decide to tax wealth, we don't know very much about what rates they should optimally choose or how taxpayers would respond. That is until now. A team of economists has been investigating the effects of changes in wealth tax in Switzerland, and in every way, the results are huge. Marius Brulhart of the University of Lausanne is one of the authors. He's also a CEPR fellow, and he joins me today. Marius, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
Economists are now looking more closely at wealth and its effects on inequality. Is this a Piketty effect?
Piketty certainly has a lot to account for. His research was really pioneering in this area. Him and others, Emmanuel Saez, Tony Atkinson, were also very visible pioneers in this. But it's also a coincidence with, say, the economic events of the early 21st century, the financial crisis, austerity policy that has followed, which has exacerbated people's awareness of discrepancies in income and wealth, and it's burned the Occupy movement and the We Are the 99% calls. So all this has together led to this renewed interest in wealth taxation.
As I said in the introduction, not many countries are attempting to tax wealth at the moment. Why not?
Well, we have to distinguish. So all countries do, to some extent, tax wealth. There's inheritance tax, there are taxes on property, on wealth returns. But pure wealth tax, where all types of assets are taxed at a particular rate, that has really gone out of fashion. There are currently, depending on how you count, but I would say three countries left in the OECD that have this kind of tax, and Switzerland is one of them.
Many people will be surprised to find that Switzerland is the biggest taxer of wealth at the moment in this group. How big a part of Switzerland's tax base is it, and who's paying these wealth taxes?
Switzerland taxes wealth in the sense of a recurrent tax on net wealth, all assets combined. Mm-hmm. And this tax is only applied by the sub-federal units, the cantons and the municipalities. The federal government does not tax wealth anymore since the 1950s. And for the cantons, it's quite an important source of tax revenue. It's between 3 and 4% of tax revenue. It's not negligible, and it's much bigger than it is in any other OECD country. Who pays the tax? Well, here too, Switzerland stands out, because in most countries where wealth taxes or some form of wealth tax exist, it is really targeted at the very, very wealthy with very high exemption levels. Not so in Switzerland. Here it's a bit more than a third of taxpayers have wealth that falls within the wealth tax range. So the exemption levels are comparatively very low.
And what is included as wealth, and who's deciding how wealthy someone is?
So wealth encompasses all assets you own, except for pension assets and some private belongings. So your personal wardrobe or your fridge, you don't have to declare. Mm-hmm. But even your car, you have to declare. Your house, all financial assets, obviously. Share stock that you hold, also non-traded parts in companies. Everything basically is subject to the tax. Most of it we declare ourselves in Switzerland, particularly financial assets. There is still banking secrecy that applies within the country. So if I choose not to declare a bank account to the tax authorities, they have no way, unless they go through the courts, of finding out that I'm doing this. Mm. So financial wealth is to a large extent self-reported. Of course, housing wealth, which is an important chunk of wealth, there you have land registries and so on. The authorities can find out. So there the self-reporting is not a big issue, but for financial wealth, it certainly is.
So you took advantage of a natural experiment in Switzerland to examine the effect of changes in the tax rate. Can you describe what you did?
Yes, so when you try to estimate how people react to changes in the tax landscape, generally the challenge you have as a researcher is that the tax landscape doesn't just change randomly. There's always a reason why certain changes occur. It's the famous endogeneity problem in statistics. So how do we hope to get around that is by focusing on a particular reform that happened to a much stronger extent in one canton, Lucerne, than in another neighboring canton, Bern. In both cantons, the governments had prepared proposals to radically reduce the prevailing wealth tax in the early 2000s. But as is always the case in Switzerland, the ultimate decision lies with the people. So there was a referendum in both cases. Mm-hmm. But there is a little institutional difference whereby in one of the two cantons, in Bern, a citizens' committee can submit a counter proposal to the government's suggestion. And in Bern, a citizens' committee took that option. And they submitted a proposal that was much less far-reaching, that cut the wealth tax much less than the government's suggestion. And in Lucerne, this option didn't exist. And when it came to the referendum, in both cantons, a majority voted in favor of reducing wealth taxes. But in Lucerne, this reduction turned out to be as big as the government had wanted it. Whereas in Bern, it was much smaller. It was this sort of halfway proposal that the citizens' committee had suggested as a third way, if you like. So by some almost random difference, a pretty large asymmetry in the size of this tax cut between the two cantons came about. And we can exploit this quasi-random difference to look at what subsequently happened to wealth taxpayers in those two cantons.
And what did happen when wealth taxes were changed?
What we observe is that prior to these reforms, the two cantons' tax bases, so the wealth that was declared in the two cantons, grew at pretty much the same rhythm. There is no so-called pre-trend in what we see in the data. And pretty much immediately after the reform, which occurred in 2009, there's a strong divergence, whereas the volume of declared wealth in Lucerne, the canton with the much bigger tax cut, grew considerably faster than in the comparison canton Bern. 6 years after the tax cut, which was much bigger in Lucerne than in Bern, Lucerne had about 40% more taxable wealth than Bern. And this difference is very likely the result of the tax cut that had occurred.
This is a big number, Marius, and it's much higher than previous research suggested for the response to changes in the wealth tax rate. Are you sure it's not that your numbers are distorted in some way?
I have quite a lot of confidence in the accuracy of our findings. Yes, we've looked at other methods. This case study of Lucerne and Bern is only one angle we took. We also looked at broader panel data between cantons, within cantons, and we always find, and you're right, of course, very strong responses. And very strong, I mean, relative to what other researchers have found in other countries. We're not the only ones to look at this important issue. And there is research for other European countries. There's also research for Colombia, where systematically our colleagues find somewhat smaller responses, not necessarily hugely smaller, but we're clearly at the upper end of the range of responses that have been found. And what I would say to this is that I think what we find really reflects what's going on in Switzerland, but there is no such thing as one responsiveness of the wealth tax base. It all depends on the institutional context. How is the wealth tax designed and how is it enforced? And that is quite peculiar in Switzerland insofar as the wealth tax applies to very small units, these cantons. Lucerne canton is smaller than Luxembourg. It's smaller than the smallest of the US states. So mobility, moving in and out, is relatively easy, just given the small spatial scale. And then there is this enforcement issue whereby a lot of wealth is self-reported and, in a sense, voluntary, whether you want to report it or not.
Was it possible for you to investigate what was behind those changes in behaviour? How much is attributable to those causes that you listed?
in the experiment looking at these two specific cantons, we actually were able to work with detailed individual level tax records, which allowed us to pinpoint some mechanisms. We cannot completely decompose the effect, but we can identify some elements. The one we can estimate with greatest precision is the moving margin. So what part of this increase in declared wealth in Lucerne subsequent to its tax cut is due to net in-migration of wealthy people? I mean, people pay the tax where they're resident. It's a residence principle. So this tax cut acted as some sort of a magnet for some wealthy people who chose then to declare their tax residence in this canton. And we find that about a quarter of the effect is due to people moving to that canton. Now, is a quarter a lot or is it not a lot? It all depends. Given the small size of the canton, if you'd asked me before we looked at the data, I would have expected it to be bigger. But a quarter, of course, is still considerable.
Well, that leaves three quarters. Was that other three quarters down to people under-declaring their wealth?
Yes. Of the remaining three quarters, there's another quarter that we have fairly good idea where it comes from. About 20% is linked to capitalization into house prices, which is a roundabout way of saying that lower taxes attracted wealthy taxpayers, which drove up property prices. And these higher property prices end up being reflected in taxable wealth. If my house appreciates in value sooner or later, this will affect the valuation of my property in my tax declaration. This 20% real estate capitalization effect is actually also indirectly linked to mobility of taxpayers. So if you like it, the broad measure of the mobility effect is closer to 45%. And then there is a perhaps surprisingly small part of the effect. We estimated it at roughly 6%, but there are pretty large error margins around it, which is due to increased savings, where if I can keep more of my wealth, then I'm inclined to save more. There's also a mechanical effect, just if the tax takes out less of my wealth mechanically grows faster. But this we quantify at roughly 6%. So if I add up all these mechanisms that we can roughly quantify, I end up with about half of the total effect explained by savings and mobility, and about half of the total effect unexplained. And when I say unexplained in the data, these are increases in declared financial assets, which we cannot tie to people moving in or out of the canton.
So is it the case then that as the tax rate goes down, people declare more of the wealth that they have?
That's what it seems to be. I mean, you can try to construct some stories where they invest more shrewdly and then their return on investment is higher because of the lower tax rate. It's a little bit of a residual conclusion what happened with this half of the effect that is due to increased financial assets, but the most plausible explanation is that it was a reduced avoidance and evasion behavior where people gradually started declaring wealth that previously they had not declared. There are also gray areas in the valuation of small businesses where small business accountants and owners have some leeway into how aggressively they want to mark down the value of their business. Maybe when the wealth tax goes down, they also are prepared to value for tax purposes their businesses a bit closer to what the market valuation would be.
As I said in the introduction, we don't so far know what the optimal wealth tax rate should be, if there was one. Do your results suggest that there is an optimal rate, a sort of wealth tax Laffer curve?
In principle, there is, of course. Every tax, you can push it too far and then people find ways around it. In the specific example that we've studied, even though we find these very strong responses, we actually don't find that any of the tax cuts in our data have paid for themselves. So the revenue effects were strongly reduced by the responses, but they were not overturned. So tax cuts did not actually end up generating more revenue. Now, when I say that, I have to say that we observe these effects up to 6 years after the reforms in question. What we also see is that some of these effects still seem not to have entirely played out, even within a 6-year window. So if you had a longer time frame to look at, it is not inconceivable that in some cases tax cuts may have been a revenue increasing, but that's certainly not the general picture we get.
Okay, Marius, very often on Vox Talks, we ask our guests to be policymaker for a day. We're giving you a particularly tough job. Your job is to introduce a Swiss-style wealth tax to another country. What does your research tell us about how to go about doing that?
Well, it depends on why you want to introduce this wealth tax. If you want to introduce it to raise revenue and to make the tax system more progressive, then I think the Swiss example teaches us two things. One is you should try to levy this tax at the central level and not at the level of individual states or subunits of the country, so as to minimize this mobility margin. And the second lesson is to have third-party reporting, have a direct link between financial institutions and the taxing authorities, because otherwise, of course, the possibilities for avoidance and evasion are very big.
Given what we know now about the effect of wealth on inequality, are we going to see more of these taxes in the future, or are they just too difficult to implement?
You know, to get back to Thomas Piketty, and if he's right and the share of wealth and capital in total income keeps rising, and if it's true that inequality will in parallel continue to increase, then it's hard to avoid the conclusion that there'll be strong political pressures for more redistributive taxation, more taxation of capital. Now, wealth taxes in the form that we have them in Switzerland is only one instrument in an arsenal of potential fiscal measures, but it seems likely that they will continue to be discussed and proposed.
I expect there are probably quite a lot of real policymakers who will be looking at your research in the future. So, Marius, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It seems that every piece of research we cover on Vox Talks that's about tax or tax avoidance makes you go, really? Don't take my word for it. Listen to The Missing Profits of Nations, featuring Thomas Torsloff and Ludwig Wehr from September 2018. And Annette Alstadt-Seiter, she did an interview for us on tax evasion and inequality, and that was from August 2018. But make sure you don't miss the paper that we've been talking about today, and that is called Behavioural Responses to Wealth Taxes, Evidence from Switzerland. The authors are Marius Brulhart, Jonathan Gruber, Matthias Krapf, and Kurt Schmidheine. It is discussion paper 14054 at the CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We're here every Friday, and you won't want to miss an episode, so you won't if you subscribe. And if you do miss one, or just want to hear your favourites one more time, you can always find the back catalogue at voxeu.org/vox-talks.